Recording has started.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to the Review of All Rights Protection Mechanisms, RPM, in All GTLD's PDP Working Group Call, held on the 15th of February, 2017. In the interest of time, there'll be no roll call, as we have quite a few participants. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room. So if you are only on the audio bridge, could you please let yourself be known now?
Rebecca Tushnet.
Thank you, Rebecca. Hearing no more names, I would like to remind all to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes, and to please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I'll turn it back over to our co-chair, J. Scott Evans. Please begin.
Good evening, good morning, good afternoon, everyone, depending on your geographic locale. Thank you for joining us today. Unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on your point of view, I am the chair of today's call. Phil and Kathy are at the non-contracted party house intersessional, which is taking place in Reykjavik. So I will be hosting today. We decided to go forward, even though some people may be participating in that event, just so that we could, you know, marshal our forces and move forward as quickly as possible so that we can continue our work. The first question I always have to ask is whether there are any updates to any statements of interest for any of the attendees today's call. Seeing none, we can move to the next portion of our agenda today. The next point on the agenda is to review the table that staff has prepared and we have been reviewing and were reviewing last week as well. On categories 3 through 6, and you can see our view is whether one of the things we're sort of looking at this with a perspective of is whether we need to develop any additional questions for Deloitte or any questions that we need further information on. So that's sort of where we are. Mary, I'm so very sorry. Could you just bring us up to speed briefly on where we ended last week so that those that may not have been on the call last week will have sort of an understanding of where we are in the process?
Surely, J. Scott, and no problem. Hi, everybody. This is Mary from staff. So last week we had this document on the agenda, but we mostly focused, in fact, we focused exclusively on the previous table, which is for the Trademark Clearinghouse Categories 1 and 2. As you'll know from the mailing list, we have now asked everyone to use the mailing list to review that table, at least for the final time round about now, to see if they have any comments and follow-up on that one, so that this week we are beginning with the next category, which is Category 3, Breadth and Reach or Scope. So, in other words, we'll start at the top of this document. And, J. Scott, the last comment I'll make is, and I know she's on the phone, I heard her, Rebecca. She had a comment last week on that first question we have in Category 3, which is Question 7, and I've put the text that she typed from last week into the notes part on the right side. I hope that helps.
Okay. All right, I appreciate that very much, Mary. Rebecca, do you want to speak to your comment that Mary has transcribed into the notes section of the agenda slash notes that are on the right side of everyone's screen?
So, hi, this is Rebecca Tushnet. I just wanted to point out that it seems to me that the criteria given by the group were not correctly translated, in that I thought it was pretty clear that the protectable mark had to be completely representable, or at least not have graphic elements that were a necessary part of the mark to be accepted into the program, whereas as it's been translated, they accept the textual elements. And this can have a pretty significant difference when someone only has a registration, say, for a particular stylized version of an otherwise generic or descriptive term. And there are plenty of examples. The one that I point to is parents for magazines. there, and I think that's a significant flaw that I'd like to look at and maybe give more direction on. That's it.
Thanks, Rebecca. I will say, this is J. Scott Evans for the record, that when we had designed the original sunrise period some 10, 15 years ago, that this was a point of major contention. Basically, there was an attorney on the team at that time from the firm Bird & Bird in London, and she was definitely taking the position where we ended up, and that's the one that Rebecca has proposed today or brought up today in her comments both in the text and verbally just now on the phone, and that is that in certain jurisdictions that don't do a descriptiveness test, you can get past a lot of rejections just by putting some sort of graphic element with something that would necessarily be considered to be descriptive for the services. And I think the example, and I'm reaching back a long way, and I'm old, so I forgive me, Jane Udemir, if I'm getting this wrong, but I believe it was travel was the comment that she'd made. And there was a registration in the European Union, which was very young at the time, trademark office for travel, and it had like just a leaf design above the word travel, and it was for travel services. And that was, so I do know that at least when Sunrise were initially brought forward, that was a concern. So I will throw that out to the group, and you know, but also to Rebecca's point, you know, with regards to certain trademarks and design elements is a different story, but there are certain terms that are deemed descriptive, at least under U.S. law, that can over a period of time develop secondary meaning, and you can still get a block letter word registration, even though in the view of someone that doesn't understand trademark law, they might think that they shouldn't have rights in it. I'll just throw that out. But I was under the impression that design marks were not eligible, but perhaps I just didn't pay attention. I certainly didn't submit any design registrations. They were all block letter word registrations. Does anyone else have a point of concern or thought or? Yes, Mary.
Hi, everyone. It's Mary again. And not so much a viewpoint, but just to draw folks' attention to the fourth column, which is a summary of the feedback that ICANN got from the community when this was raised as part of the first round of feedback to the clearinghouse in 2015. And it seems to us that there's some disagreement amongst the community, possibly as to what's accepted, and as to your point and Rebecca's, what should be accepted. So from the staff perspective, this may be quite an important question for the working group to discuss. And secondly, we'll note that Deloitte was asked a specific question about how many design marks were submitted and validated, and what was their criteria for validating these marks. In addition, we asked them how they are differentiating between design marks in the practical application of the TMCH guidelines. Unfortunately, I think we did not, when we reached out to them initially, fully explain that by design marks, we meant what the guidelines described as image marks and so forth. So this seems to us also to be something clearly to be followed up with them, because I would imagine that the group would very much like to know what their practice is in terms of the criteria they use and how they differentiate. So just two comments from staff for now. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Mary. Do we know, do they have guidelines on their site that we can look at and see what they tell potential applicants to the trademark clearinghouse they accept? I mean, that might be interesting just to see what they say. Susan Payne, I see your hand is up.
Hi, J. Scott. Yes, they do. they say that they accept where they're accepting a mark which includes letters and words and numbers with other elements. The letters, words, and numbers must be predominant, must be clearly separable and distinguishable from the device element, and the matching must be in the same order as the words appear in the mark. I don't know if I've explained that very well. It appears within their guidelines in relation to matching criteria rather than specifically in relation to what they accept as a mark that you can submit. But, of course, you wouldn't submit a mark that couldn't meet the matching criteria elements, if you like. And then they give a couple of examples. So one of the examples they give is the ICANN logo, where it's the sort of globe logo and ICANN's underneath it. And they say, you know, the matching on that mark would be the word ICANN. Okay. And there's a couple of other examples that they give.
Well, you know, one of the suggestions I see that Maxim has suggested that could we request examples of accepted, rejected imagery marks and look at them. That is one thing. Another thing to do, and I wonder if we might do this, and I'll put it to the group, is select 4 or 5 marks that are out there and ask them to evaluate them and tell us whether they would be accepted or not based on their criteria. Either way will work. Does the group have a preference one way or the other for a follow-up question to them?
Hi, this is Rebecca, Rebecca Tashnet. So I think that's a good idea. I would definitely want to put in something like parents, because I think that tests exactly the problem that I see in the translation from what they got from ICANN to what they put as their criteria. The predominance thing seems both new and problematic to me.
Okay. Well, Rebecca, could I task you with reaching out to the list and putting together 5 or 6 suggested marks that we can get some consensus around about submitting to Deloitte and asking the question, we're submitting these, can you explain to us, would these be accepted into the clearinghouse and give us your rationale, whether accepted or rejected?
That would be great. I encourage people, if you have something in mind, just circulate it right now. Sorry, again, this is Rebecca Tashnet.
Well, I'll tell you one that I would be interested in, and that is when we design these, how about Fruit of the Loom in the oval logo with the fruit at the top? I'm happy to find a copy of it and send it to you.
Yeah, so again, this is Rebecca Tashnet. The one thing I would wonder about that is, I assume Fruit of the Loom has a standard character mark registration somewhere. So what I'm particularly interested in are those cases where they can't dig up a standard character mark registration.
Okay. All right. Well, I will look to see if I can – I'll call my mind to see if I can find some. There was one that I dealt with years ago, Green Screen. I wonder if it's still registered. It was for kiosks that provided information regarding the environment. And I think George has suggested that Cars by Disney is – there's a stylized one there. He has put a link to it. Rebecca, you're not in the – George, could you send that to Rebecca, that link? She's not in – the Adobe Connect, so she can't see your link. George says he'll send that to you, Rebecca. All right, let's move on then. I think that we've covered question 7, so we go to – are we okay to move to question 8? How are geographical indications protected? How are geographical indications, protected designations of origin, and protected appellations of origin currently handled by the provider? As of January 2017, no registry operator has pursued the option of including marks within the category of other marks that constitute intellectual property and meet a registry's individual requirements. That is that their response to us? That's Deloitte's response. Is they? Yes, Susan, I see your hand. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, when the responses have been submitted by Deloitte, I mean, I'm not sure that that's the answer to this question, if you know what I mean. I mean, they definitely have, or at least their guidelines permit the submission of geographical indications and designations of origin. So this seems like they're answering a different question to the one we asked.
Then that should be the clarification that we seek, don't you think? Mary, I see your hand is up. I apologize.
Not at all, J. Scott. And that was actually what staff was going to suggest. And just to clarify, and again, you know, maybe it's slightly confusing. We actually did not ask Deloitte the specific Trademark Clearinghouse Charter questions, because as you may remember, at the time that we reached out to Deloitte, these questions were still going through refinement. So the questions that Deloitte got were actually developed by a subteam, the data gathering subteam. And to further clarify, while we asked them for design marks, and as I noted, we didn't actually really explain that we meant device and image marks, we did not ask specifically about geographical indications or designations of origin. So, like I said, staff was going to suggest that we put this as a follow-up to them. And I'll note, I believe that, I don't see the gentleman from Origin on the call, but I believe that he made a similar suggestion to the mailing list as well.
Yes, and I would suggest, unless I see great objection, that we do submit this as a follow-up question, this specific question in 8. Yes, Susan.
I was just going to say, I think part of the reason we didn't ask every single question that was a charter question, quite apart from the fact that, as Mary pointed out, that we had a separate exercise that refined the charter questions a little. But, I mean, I don't think we asked questions where we felt that the answer was already there. Now, it may be that as we go back and look at it again, we feel that we should have asked a question or that we've got new questions. But, you know, we knew from the Deloitte guidance that you could submit GIs. So we didn't ask them a question, can you submit GIs? Because the answer is in the Deloitte guidance.
Who can submit a GI?
Who can, did you say?
Yeah, who is the body that gets to submit a GI? So who gets to submit champagne?
Whoever is the owner of the GI?
Mateo says the committee champagne. So I mean, I'm not familiar enough with the ins and outs of GIs to know if each GI has a particular sponsoring body that's responsible for that. It seems to me that Mateo is implying that is the case. Okay. So I mean, I think that okay. So we know that they accept them. Maybe a follow-up question is how many have they processed? Okay. Any other comments on this question? Okay, so where I see we're ending up is Susan has indicated that their own guidance says that they accept these. So that seems to answer question 8 in the affirmative. I think the follow-up questions, unless I hear otherwise, maybe we want to know, have they processed GIs? And then find out, just for our own edification, who can submit a GI? Who do they accept them from? And what criteria do they use to verify that that's in fact the GI, the appropriate party? Okay. All right, moving to question 9. Should the trademark plus 50 be retained as is, amended or removed? We see here that we have the response from Deloitte. And we've got a response from the registered stakeholder group. And they are requesting that we get additional information. I think we've got some information here on numbers from, in this respect, 209 of you have been submitted to the trademark records linked to 209 TMCH records. These UDRF cases cover in total 375 abused domain name labels. Okay. So the question I would ask is, do we want to look through these suggested queries from the registry stakeholder group and see if they've been answered, and if not, do we want to submit those as follow-up questions to Deloitte? What do people think? Yes, Christine.
Hi, Christine Durian, Amazon Registry. My question, I guess, is sort of to answer the question with another question. I'm trying to figure out what has not been asked here. Mary put in the chat the question that the sub-team asked, and I was on the sub-team, so I remember this. How many TMCH records include a TM plus 50 list? And they provided that. How many are on this list on average? They provided that. And how many registrations were made for entries in the TM plus 50 list? That may be that may be answered in the 209 also. So my question would be, if we do think we should go back to the TMCH, I don't know that there's a whole lot we could ask that we haven't already asked. I think our questions from here go to what's the value to the community. Are the copyright or the trademark holders finding that this was a valuable service? Is it you know, as pointed out in the fourth column, is it underutilized? You know, should it be more utilized? Should it not? Is it a waste? I think our questions should head down that path, which I understand from last week's call. I'm jumping the gun and proposing. But I just wanted to respond and say I don't know that there's a whole lot more we can ask the Trademark Clearinghouse here.
Well, thank you very much, Christine. But I see here that the registry stakeholder group suggests that we ask the number of trademark claims that have been issued against previously abused labels, the number of domains that registered that correspond to previously abused labels. I mean, I think some of those questions might be valuable.
So I'm maybe someone who knows more about this can correct me, but I'm fairly certain the Trademark Clearinghouse wouldn't know how many claims have been issued against these labels. And that I don't think, I'm fairly certain they would not know how many were registered. That's not information the Trademark Clearinghouse has. I think those are great questions. I just don't think the Clearinghouse has them.
That I can't answer. I don't know either. It seems to me they have to have some sort of record of how many trademark claims they send out.
Or registrars send those out, right? So we would have to ask the registrars the last two questions.
Okay.
Maybe. Or maybe we could just tell, well, maybe not, never mind. We could probably, well, if we had the list of abused labels, we would, I guess, be able to run whoWHOIS checks on those. But
yeah.
So there's got to be a better way to answer that question.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm not seeing a strong push one way or the other from anyone suggesting that we get any more information. I will request the group, if anybody wants to respond back to the group, how they think we can get some additional information here, and if they think the additional information would be helpful, if they would just put that in an email to the group, to the list, so we can consider it. I'm having all kinds of issues with this scroll, self-scroll. I apologize. Keeps wanting to go to the end of everything. All right. Okay. I'm going to have to go to the large screen, which means I cannot see anyone's hands at the moment. We're on question 10, I think. Should the TMCH matching rules be retained, modified, or expanded, e.g. to include plurals, marks contained, or marks plus keyword, and or common typos of a mark? Does anyone have comment here? Yes, George.
George Greenless by the transcript. I'd be opposed to that kind of expansion that they be plurals because it's not necessarily a trademark infringement if it's a plural of a common dictionary term. So it would open up a Pandora's box if that was to be permitted. Thank you.
Okay, so I guess my question is, we can debate this question we go. I don't think anyone feels like that's a question we need to ask Deloitte or anyone else. That just seems like something we would have a discussion amongst ourselves when we get to that question. Number 11, should the scope of the RPMs associated with the TMCH be limited to apply only to TLDs that are related to the categories of goods and services in which the dictionary terms within a mark within a trademark are protected? So you see here, it looks like, according to Deloitte at least, or let me, I can't see the top. Mary, what's the third column? Is that the registry's response?
Hi, J. Scott and everybody. So, no, the third column is Deloitte's response. So, basically, this question was not raised with Deloitte. If you see a blank, this question was raised with Deloitte, but like I mentioned, it may not have been in the exact form that you see in the first column,
right, right,
which is actually the charter question that's refined.
Okay. So that's their response is in the third column, and the fourth column is what we've heard from registries. It looks to me...
Hi, Jay Scott. For this particular question, that's correct.
Okay. So we see here that they're saying that it was designed in such a way that you can limit it, but they don't make those decisions. It looks like that's a registry-specific choice. Okay. I don't think we need to go back to them with any follow-up. Does anyone disagree? I think there needs to be some discussion about this amongst ourselves, but I don't think we have to go back to Deloitte for anything. Okay. Number 12, let's see if I can get to it. Are there concerns about operational considerations, such as cost, reliability, global reach, service diversity, and consistency, due to the TMCH database being provided by a single provider? If so, how may they be addressed? Well, definitely we need to look into what we received from the what staff feedback was from the community on that, but I don't think that's a question that we're going to ask Deloitte, since they have a vested interest in there only being a single provider. If anyone disagrees with me, raise your hand. Okay, are the costs and benefits of the TMCH reasonably proportionate amongst rights holders, registries, registrars, registrants, other members of the community, and ICANN? Again, I don't think that that's something we need to go to Deloitte for, and I think we can look at the response we received from the registries with regards to that as we discuss that charter question. Number 14, how accessible is the TMCH database and the RPM rights protection actions and defenses to individuals, organizations, and rights holders, as well as trademark agents in developing countries? Seems to me that we need to reach out to somebody from some developing countries to get Paul, we are on question 14, as George points out in the chat. So this is having to do with the accessibility. I see I saw Mary's hand first and then Christine, so I'm going to go to Mary first.
Thanks, J. Scott. This is Mary from staff. Just a real quick background comment that we didn't put the feedback in here, but some of this, as you recall, was raised when we discussed the question of outreach and education as well. And there have been some community comments noting that there may be difficulty in terms of at least the TMCH outreach and education in developing countries and in non-English speaking countries. So whether or not that's relevant, I thought I'd just remind the group that we did get those comments. Thank you.
Mary, if I might ask that you put those comments in the chart and then just notate that they came not from Deloitte or from a registry, they came from the community. Maybe you could put them in that last column under staff report and just color them a different color and put a bracket note.
Will do. Thanks, J. Scott.
Thanks, Christine from Amazon Registry. Maybe Mary or Susan or Vibhav can help me remember here, but I'm fairly certain we asked Deloitte a question about this. I thought we asked them to provide, and maybe this was just in the context of education, but I thought we asked them to provide the geographic locale of the various marks relied upon and the agents or the lawyers or the person submitting. So the whoever, you know, and we're countries, different countries with different marks being represented. I mean, that wouldn't be 100%, right, because I can be in the U.S. and submit my Chinese registration. But, I mean, you could get a sense, right, and then to talk about where the agents and the lawyers and the filers were coming from. So I thought we asked that question, and I don't know why the answer's not in here. Am I confused, Mary, Susan, Vibhav, somebody?
Hi, it's Susan. I was just typing, but I think we did ask them. To the extent that we got a response, I think it was recorded in that education section. But and my recollection is a bit sketchy as well because I don't have the other document in front of me. But I think the response was fairly sketchy.
Mary.
Hi.
Thanks, J. Scott, Susan, and Christine. I'm trying to look back through the Deloitte document, and my recollection, I'll look again after this call, my recollection is similar to Susan's, and as you noted, Christine, that was part of the outreach. We had asked about the precise nature of the activities, who was the audience, and more specifically, what regions and languages did the outreach sessions take place in. And as part of Deloitte's response, they said that they did do sessions and materials in various regions and languages. They gave examples of their hosting and sponsoring seminars and meetings in countries, not just in Europe, but also in Russia, China, Taiwan, Japan, and the Middle East in various languages. So, Susan, if that's what you're referring to, hopefully those are more specifics. Thanks.
Thanks, Mary. Vaval?
Hi. Good evening, everyone. Vaibhav Agarwal for the record. Thanks, Jay Scott. Now, I think I would agree to what Christine just pointed out. And one of the initial calls when we started deliberating on this, we had taken a collective decision to request, you know, I'd like the group to take a look at just to take us all in the past a little. The starting point of this was the collection of IP addresses from where the hits came in. And now going forward in the discussions, we were also of this opinion that Deloitte should have given us exactly how and on what basis have they conducted this exercise. They claim to do so. However, for my knowledge, I am unaware of any such exercise. And any which ways, Middle East and Russia are nowhere called developing countries. Now, we need to look at Africa, we need to look at India, we need to look at South Asia as a whole. We might want to, you know, go further down to Fiji, to that side. And there's a lot of business that comes from that part of the world. And so I think we should relook at this and treat this as a separate exercise in terms of getting a more, probably a subgroup could be a very good idea. Quick subgroup could be a very good idea. We could gather representatives and ask Deloitte to come in that subgroup and come in and give us their inputs in a very data-driven format instead of writing stories. That's what my opinion could be.
Thanks, Vaval. I think, you know, our as we come to this discussion, point in our discussions, I think your point is one that will be taken note of. One of our recommendations may very well be that there needs to be further work done on this particular topic, and make the suggestion you did about having a sub-team or something, you know, that could be one of our suggestions to the team. I don't know if that's within our charter now is to do that. I think what we're supposed to do is find out how broad it was according to this question, and then give an opinion about whether that is sufficient, insufficient, or what, and maybe give a recommendation as to, if we think it's insufficient, what remedial efforts we recommend that ICANN and or Deloitte or in combination or the community take to rectify whatever concerns we have identified from our inquiry. Vaval, do you have another question, or is your hand still up?
Yes. Thanks for the opportunity, Jay Scott. Vaibhav Agarwal for the record. Now, just to add on to what you said, all I'm suggesting is, and that's all in the cover of the entire charter that we have and in the space that we are in, what I'm suggesting is that the entire awareness exercise could be data-driven in terms of saying that, okay, if we are able to ascertain the amount of business coming from an X region, has the awareness exercise been carried out in that region, simple as it is? You know, and we could phase it out. We could divide that in a phased manner in terms of our recommendation, saying if business is coming from an X region, has the exercise been done? Yes, no, and how much? Okay. And then, you know, in the next phase, perhaps there could be lesser regions could be responded and so on and so forth. So it's a community-driven, data-driven exercise, rather, I should say, where we should be able to recommend doing all the exercises per the way the business flows in. It will save us all the time, the money, and it will give us a specific approach to the topic. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. I think Susan Payne's hand is now up.
Yeah, I found their response. It's in the document that Mary circulated on the 31st of January, which was the actual Deloitte response. And we asked them in question 8 to provide a breakdown of countries of where the corporate headquarters of the registrants using TM agents were located, and they said, please note the Trademark Clearinghouse does not have this information as it's not part of the scope of the Trademark Clearinghouse. So they basically said they couldn't tell us where the users of the service were based. They know where the trademark agents are, I think, who've used their service, but they don't know where the companies are.
Well, sorry. If I can just butt in quickly, Vaibhav Agarwal, for the record. I think that can easily be captured from the IP addresses from where they get the request for TMCH clearing. And that data sits with them. They've been avoiding circulating that data since day one. That may please be noted.
And Jay Scott, this is Terry. If you're speaking, we're no longer hearing you.
Sorry, I was on mute and I didn't notice. I was speaking to Vival and saying that if I understand Susan's comment correctly, the IP address solution that he gives us is not necessarily going to work, because I think Deloitte's position is, yeah, we can check the IP addresses, but that IP address is going to be for the trademark agent. And that trademark agent could be located in a jurisdiction that is not the same as the registrant in the database. So you could have a large firm in England that does work all over the world, and they're submitting trademarks through their IP address in England, and it looks like you have all this work coming from, all these requests coming from England, and that in fact their registrants are all over the world. Vival, I'm going to bring this to a close. I'm going to allow you to have the last word, and then I'm going to move us on, okay?
Right. Yeah, I think Vaibhav Agarwal, for the record, I think what you're saying is right, but in most cases, the firm in London is a large firm. A lot of clients who are small and medium enterprises or smaller clients, they do not submit a TMCH request directly. They do go through a registrar, and also this is a data. Okay, this is a data. This is a subjective discussion. So as long as we can have the data, there could be means and methods that could be easily worked on in terms of filtering that data and at least reach to a fair idea of what's happening and from what region. I'm not saying this could be full, absolutely, but then the data is there, then we can always have an option to give it a shot.
Thank you. If that's captured the notes, let's move on to question. I think are we at 16? Does the scope of the Trademark Clearinghouse and the protection mechanisms which flow from it reflect the appropriate balance between the rights of trademark holders and the rights of non-trademark registrants? And again, this is a question that we'll have to go to the community on and look at. It's not a question, I think, that we require any additional information from Deloitte on. So I don't think there's any need to garner any additional information from Deloitte with regards to that question. All right, so I think we've got the few points where we need to probably circle back with Deloitte on some things. Are there any further comments? We've got about 10, 15 minutes left.
Jason,
hearing no. Yes, Mary. Hello?
So just a note. Yes, hi, I'm here. Just a note. For those who may not be at the meeting today but may be reading the transcript or the recording, and I would say that this is also something that George and Christine are saying in the chat, that we did have a question 15, but those concerns or the scope of question 15 might be something, again, that we don't need to follow up Deloitte, and it might be something for the working group to further discuss. So I just wanted to get that on the record. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mary. Okay, unless anyone has any further business or any further comments, hearing none, I'm going to bring this meeting to conclusion. Terry, are you still on the line? Can you announce our next call?
Certainly. And our next call is at the adjusted time, so it's Wednesday the 22nd of February at 4 UTC, so very early, 04 UTC.
All right. Everyone, so we will see you, hear from you all at 04 UTC, Wednesday the 22nd. And depending on the time, I may be on a plane that day, but we'll see. Thank you all very much. I appreciate everyone's participation. It was a good discussion, and have a wonderful week, and we will see you all, or hear from you all, at least next week. Thank you.